Her name is Pauline M. from Greenville, Maryland.
Pauline S.
Morning, everybody. Let me see if I can talk into this microphone. Can everybody hear me? No? All right, more mic. All right, so in other words, I have to just lift my voice a little. Is that better?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. So I'd like to thank the committee for asking. Well, I don't really want to thank them. I'm a little perplexed. Why did they ask me to come share on this topic? So when Rosalind called me, I said, finding balance, okay, maybe. And we talked for a few minutes, and I said, so what does the committee want to hear about finding balance? Like, what was the conversation like on this topic? And she said, I don't know, some group from an area just submitted it, and it ended, and we picked it. Okay, so I want to know who in this room picked this topic, because I want you to sit right up front here so I can look at you. Anyway, maybe that's not the case. But, so for folks who don't know me, my name's Pauline, I'm an addict. I got clean July 4th, 1982. I lived in Glen Burnie at that time. I now live... Well, my home group is in Greenbelt on Monday night. It works how and why. 7 o'clock, please come join us. I have, for the 34 years I've been clean, I have always had a step tradition home group. I just don't have room in my head for open discussion, lack of structure. And I figured it this way. Left to my own devices, I would not read that book every week. I wouldn't. So at least having a home group where we read either, formerly the basic text, but now it works how and why, I get a chance to just, ruminate on that again and again. And it's interesting that every time we read the book, I find something new. Like, every time. It's crazy. Anyway, someone is going to keep time for me or help me... stay on track, perhaps? That would be wonderful. Thank you. So I have notes because I don't have a really good short-term memory, and when I'm nervous, like I am now, I'm nervous, I tend to forget. So I hope you understand that, and if you don't, I would ask you to come live in my head for a little while, where brain damage has occurred from some of the drugs that I did. So don't do drugs, first of all. And if you did, don't huff gasoline, Model Blue, smoke dope, and PCP. Notorious for brain damage. Okay. So I'm going to hit on a couple of what I consider key areas where balance is critical or it shows up in imbalance. So in order for me to find balance, I had to have imbalance. It's really easy to talk about imbalance. So the areas that I chose were physical, mental / intellectual, then emotional, spiritual, and work life. So I happen to work for a pretty large employer, and I have for a while, and we talk a lot about work-life balance. But I'm going to start with physical. So first of all, there are 168 hours in a week. Of that, I try to sleep 7 hours a night. I'm really in denial about it, but perhaps you sleep more or less, but I'm going to give you my calculations. So 7 nights at 7 hours is 49 hours. I work 40 hours. That's all I'm allowed to work. But then there's commute, which is an extra 5 hours. Then I'm going to add food-related hours. So that's shopping, food prep, and consuming food, which for me is about 9 hours a week. And I happen to be a person that requires a special diet, so I spend a lot of time being selective, and food prep is a big deal for me. Meetings, let's not forget, part of our week is going to be meetings. I tend to go to 4 meetings a week, And on average, that's a two-hour investment. Now, where I live, a lot of the meetings are 90 minutes. My home group is 75 minutes, and then there's the commute. So I'm going to give myself 8 hours a week for meetings. Service work. Depending on what I'm involved in, it could be 2 hours a week, could be 4 hours a week. So I'm going to go on upscale of 4 hours. Sponsorship. Currently, I have a couple gals that are in the books doing the step work. I'm actually in the books doing the step work, sharing with my sponsor. I'm sponsoring women, so I'm going to give myself 3.5 hours towards sponsorship. Meditation / church, worship, therapy, those things that are generally outside of recovery. Meditation fits in there, but it's sometimes different because it's formal for me. So that's 2.5 hours that I spend a week in one or the other of those categories. Fitness. That may not be a thing for you, but I've discovered it's a necessity for me. So I give myself 5 hours. So right now I'm left with, from the week, 42 hours left. Subtract from that other stuff. And this may apply to you or not. Housework, laundry, emails. Time sucker right there, right? Repairs or unforeseen things, events, school, dating, or if you're in a relationship, whatever you do to nurture that relationship. Relationship with parents, there might be some caregiving involved. Or children, there's caregiving involved. So what's missing from this equation? Well, I'm in all of it. But what's really missing is humanness. What I've described to you is kind of could be considered robotic. It's all, well, you know, and for those who know me know that I'm a linear, kind of rigid person. I function best when there's, you know, when I know what the framework is. But that's not human either. That's perfectionism, and God knows it's been a challenge in my life. So what's missing is errors. Spacing out. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story about spacing out. I went to a hypnotist maybe 20 years ago because I was having a problem with lateness. And I thought, well, hypnosis helped me quit smoking. So maybe this is an area where, because I tried the 6 and 7 step on my lateness, and I wasn't making, you know, God and I were having this partnership, but it just wasn't, I wasn't making any headway with it. So I went to the hypnotist, and she said, in her professional opinion, she said, Pauline, you have no downtime in your life. And I was describing to her what, you know, some typical things that go on. And I would go in the grocery store with a list of, you know, 10 things, and I would be in there for an hour. An hour for 10 things with a list. And what would happen is it was an environment where I just checked out. I wasn't watching television. I wasn't reading for pleasure. It was just constant input and data and reading for, you know, like self-help books and how-to books and Mechanics Illustrated. I don't know, just like that. and she was like, you have no downtime. So your mind, in its infinite wisdom, takes what it needs. So I would be in the grocery store for an hour, and that was my checkout, my space-out time. But I can't really factor that in. It just happens. And then there's socializing. Oh my God, what kind of human would I be without socializing? Even introverts socialize, and I'm an extrovert. Like, I love people, lots of contact, it's good, it's great for me. What's missing is leisure, making love. You know, that maybe that falls under dating for some of you. Maybe not. You know, Facebook. Talk about a time sucker. I really need to calculate a couple hours into my work week just for social media and that kind of thing. And then there's fun. So, you know, when I get down to my 42 hours, where's the fun part? So I actually need to schedule fun into my life in order to have balance. Because for me, what I've realized is, you know, I can be very serious, really serious, too much. So I need to have a little silliness and a little play. And it's not natural for me. It's not natural. I was raised and bred to be a caregiver of sorts. So my mind goes to a different place. I just don't think about fun as a priority. And in my step work and in my seeking, you know, trying to find balance, I've come to realize it's necessary. So when my friend Bill emailed me earlier last week and said, you know, we want to go to King's Dominion on this date and this date, which both happen to be Mondays, which would mean I miss my home group, and I'm not fond of that, I wrote back and I said, you know, my entire bank of leave has been scheduled, which is true. I've gone to Europe for 11 days later on in the year, and I went to Florida for a week, and, you know, I have a couple conventions that require days off, so I said, no, man, I don't think I can do that. And I said, but, you know, get back to me later, or maybe I can figure something out. And so I moved some time around, and maybe I can still figure out how to get to King's Dominion on a weekday. But I could go on a weekend. But it really is about scheduling fun. I have to make sure that I do that for myself. So what happens when I'm out of balance? I get these feelings of overwhelm and stress. Procrastination sets in. I see some people nodding, so I'm not alone in this. Procrastination. Ellen DeGeneres had a really witty way of talking about that at the end of one of her shows, and I wish I could quote it. It was just so it was so on target. Like, she was saying, basically, procrastination is nature's way of saving us from something. But it was very witty. You should look that one up. So what else happens is I neglect other areas when I'm out of balance, especially emotionally. And then, for me, sometimes a victim mentality creeps in, which is my least favorite thing, although I do have it. And that's like, oh my God, feel sorry for me. Look at what's happening. Now, usually what's happening has been partly my creation. So I have to inventory it. I have to inventory it, and I'll get into that a little bit in a minute. So some of the ways that emotional imbalance manifests for me is in spending. I don't like the way I feel, so I'm going to try to fix it. And eating. Now, if you're new to recovery, or, you know, fairly new, and you haven't found yourself sitting in front of the TV late at night with a gallon of ice, or whatever size ice cream that they produce now. It used to be a half a gallon. I think it's 48 ounces now. I don't really even eat ice cream rarely, but, you know, you find yourself eating the whole thing and still feeling hungry. If you haven't done that yet, or something that resembles that, it's coming. You know, we all get our turn of feeling like food is a chance to fill the emotional void or the imbalance or the stress and the overwhelm. Maybe it won't be a lasting thing for you, but my thing is popcorn. I'm addicted to popcorn. So that's my, like, late night, I'm having feelings that I want to stuff kind of snack. So I said spending and eating. One of the ways it also comes out for me when I'm experiencing imbalance is I'm short with people. You know, I'm just not kind and not thoughtful. Because I'm in impatience, right? I'm in that character defect. And, oh, I don't have enough time, and I'm going to run. And, you know, your question doesn't merit my thoughtful response. It's not you, it's me. So, oh, somebody is taking ownership of that comment. Yeah, so I don't like being short with people, and I don't like the look in my friend's eyes when I have blown them off unnecessarily because I'm in that space. So it's, and then sometimes I check out, like in the grocery store. That's just one of those emotional side effects. And then my favorite is when I'm in imbalance emotionally, I have a tendency to increase my need for control and perfection. It may, you know, if only I say to myself, if only everything were linear and none of these other things were happening, this system of mine would work in theory. But again, it lacks humanness. And I happen to be a human. So I've had to learn to give myself a break. I mean, my sponsor can testify. I've had a hell of a time with perfectionism. I was raised in a by a really critical, judgmental mom, and it wore on me, and I strive for perfectionism, and now I have to find, you know, or have been over the years finding ways to alleviate some of that pressure on myself. So all of that I just described, it's all unrealistic. Control and perfection, unrealistic. So emotional imbalance also can include over-trusting and not trusting. So over-trusting meaning I get in denial. If I'm emotionally out of balance, like for instance, I had a new boyfriend years ago, but still. And I just believed what he was saying, and I took him at value, and I trusted him, and I invested in some of the things that he put in front of me, emotionally invested. I was really not in check, you know. And I'm not saying walk around not trusting anybody. That's completely the opposite direction, which I've also put on my list. But anyway, when I realized that I was putting a lot of energy and time and effort into something that was an investment that was giving me no return, I went the other way to not trusting. You know, and that's out of balance too. What I really need to do is go inside and inventory. So I'm going to say that word a number of times, inventory. Another way, another thing for me that's been a real issue is caretaking and caregiving. And when I'm in that space of, oh my God, if everybody would just do what they're supposed to do and it would all be linear, and I'm trying to control and be perfect and want you to be in control and perfect too, it's usually about some sort of caregiving, and then I'm really, really out of balance. And yet, you know, you do play a role. Sometimes people have taken advantage of my kindness to the point of abuse. And that's my job to recognize that. So I've been in working at, for many years now, shattering denial. Or at least coming face to face with it. Okay, Pauline, you're in denial. You've overextended yourself again. What are you going to do? So we'll get to solutions in a minute. The other thing that is a really big factor in this, especially in this caregiving piece that, or caretaking, overextending myself, is beliefs. Now, if I hadn't done a lot of inventory and still continue to do inventory work, I would not really know what my beliefs are. And beliefs are like a lot of times just operating behind the scenes, don't really know, they don't like jump out like character defects, they're just back there influencing my behavior. So, you know, like I believe that plastics are bad for the world, so I recycle. Now you may not have that belief, so you operate differently. But for me, a lot of things happen because of my beliefs. And I've had to uncover them. In my favorite story, my grandmom was in early stages of dementia, and her house needed care, and she needed to be looked after a little. She was living alone at age 93. Yeah. God, I miss her. I really do. And so my aunt said, like, I'm not so sure I can manage both households and this and that. And I said, hey, no problem. Let me go over and visit grandmom. Clean her house once a month, I'd be happy to do that. And I started my wheels spinning about who in my family, like of my cousins, could I invite to help with this process. And immediately, all the males came off the list. That's really curious, don't you think? I got a bunch of male cousins, and they're mighty capable of cleaning. They're mighty capable of spending time with their grandmother. But my mind took them right off the list. Why? Because I have belief that was operating in the background that men can't be trusted to show up. Yeah. And a lot of that is merited by being raised by an alcoholic father. And a lot of it's not merited. It's an old belief that needed to be looked at under a microscope. So I pulled out my microscope and I looked at it. And I found it to be untrue and unfair. Now, if you earn that from me, I'll treat you accordingly. I recently had to, defriend someone who took advantage of me, of my kindness. And that was a male. But again, he earned it. But I started from a place of, level playing field. Anyway, so I have to look at these things. Okay, solutions. I'm going to get into some solutions. So a big solution is boundaries. Oh, and it just hurts to say it. But let me talk a little bit about that. I have come to understand that there are two kinds of boundaries. There are internal boundaries, the kind that I, try to, I want to use the word enforce. Do you hear how easily that came out? The kind that I try to adhere to myself, and then the kind that I have to extend externally. My biggest imbalance is sleep. I don't know about the rest of y'all, but I really don't. I don't have good sleep hygiene. And I recently heard a guy say that sleep is no different than any other nutrients. And I'm a person that focuses on nutrients. You would think that I got that, but I finally just recently got that. I'm like, oh my God, it's a nutrient. I need it to survive and to thrive. Because survival is, when we were using. Now we get a chance to thrive, and I'm working towards that. So I need to set boundaries with my time. When I was in college, they said, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's been a couple years, but it was like for every credit hour, I had to study 3 hours. So if I'm doing a 3-credit course, that's 9 hours of study that I had to allot, to factor into that 40-some hours that was left, right? And I did that. And one of the ways that I managed my time is whenever the phone rang, I would get my little kitchen egg timer out and set it for 10 minutes, and I'd answer the phone, knowing who it is, because, we mostly have caller ID now. And I'd say, I really want to hear what you, talk to you. This would be great, but I only have 10 minutes, and I've set a timer. I don't know how you do it, but I'm a talker, and I love people that talk. So, it's easy to reel out of control quickly. So I had to do that. I'm sorry, I only have 10 minutes, but I am so glad that you interrupted my study, because my head's just, shoo. So that's one way I managed it. And some other ways I had to, back off of social engagements. I wasn't watching TV yet. I didn't watch television for 30 years. It's really hard to believe, but I didn't. I watch it now. It's a lot of fun. Well, when that hypnotherapist said you need to have downtime, I was like, oh, okay. Maybe that's what TV is good for. Because I considered it a mind sucker, but, maybe it's just that decompression time that maybe it's good for me in moderation. No one likes that word in this room, I'm sure. Okay, boundaries also with money. So I had to learn to budget myself. I had to learn, and I don't like the word budget because it feels constrictive, but what I needed to do was find a spending plan. So I sought help from some people that are really good in that arena, and I followed their advice. So I came up with, this is my spending plan, yeah. And I realized once it's on paper that I actually have enough to live and have a little good time too. And then the other boundary specific, to me is about caregiving and caretaking. How much can I afford to do that and set boundaries? But just to drive that home a little, I'm going to read to you some of the inventory material that I've done just recently. Now, I typically share this with my sponsor first, but since she's here, she's going to hear it. This is a structured piece called Letting Go, Learning How to Balance Meeting Your Needs with Your Passion for Helping Others. And when we get to Narcotics Anonymous, when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, and I got clean, which wasn't immediate, but when I got clean, what I felt was this passion for sharing the message, for getting the word out. I went to the bar that I used to hang out with, and ladies' night on Thursday. I was trying to recruit people, I was like, you got to join. It's the greatest thing. So I was so enthusiastic and passionate, and I liken it to somebody who's been born again. And if you've been born again, you know that all of a sudden you get filled up with this passion and enthusiasm that you can't help but witness to other people. And that's what carrying the message is witnessing to others. Am I right? So anyway, I get passionate with helping others achieve this thing that we have, this beautiful, beautiful thing that we have here. So one of the questions, the first question, what does it mean to be a compulsive helper? Because I like to say yes. And my answer is, I see a need, jump right in without pausing to evaluate my circumstances. And the solution is pause. It's a seven-step principle. Pause. Can I get back to you on that? Is a really good question. It doesn't say no, doesn't say yes, it's just pause. Let me buy some time here. Let me evaluate my circumstances. And then it asks, what's the difference between caretaking and caregiving? And my answer was, caretaking is managing the stuff. I'm caring about the person or thing while managing something. Whereas caregiving is hands-on, might be daily. It's about caring for the person or item. So it's more emotionally invested, sometimes more time invested. Even when my mom was diagnosed with brain cancer, and she asked my sister and I, you know, she didn't ask her, she told us, you know, you should leave your jobs and take care of me, the two of you. And I took a deep breath and said no. You know, we, speaking for my sister too, but, you know, we can't afford to do that. So I hired people to take care of my mother. And it was the best thing because I was able to be in balance and show up as a daughter. I wanted to be her daughter. I didn't want to be her nurse. I didn't want to get in the weeds like that. I still wanted to maintain my identity. So it was important for me. And she happened to have the financial resources to make that possible. If that weren't the case, then I'd have to reevaluate that. But I was fortunate. So here's a, and this is a big question. When I get into a pattern, I get stuck in a pattern, my sponsor asks me to write a list of what are the benefits for you. Now, you know, I want to complain. You know, I'm feeling this way, I'm constricted, I'm whatever, and he's this and she's that. She asks me, what's the benefit for you? And oh my God, is that a painful inventory. So I'm going to share with you a little pain. List several reasons why it can be difficult for you to say no, even when it's the correct answer for you. This is all about meeting my needs versus my passion for helping others. Number one, because it won't get done correctly. There's my perfectionism. Number two, because no one else stepped up and there's a vacancy. I don't know how many times I've jumped into a service commitment because no one else took it and then felt resentful about it. But I know none of you good people have ever done that. Number three, I want to be a part of something. I want to feel connected. So that's a good reason. And let's look at the circumstances. Number four, my ego needs some recognition. Now, there's a clear case of spiritual imbalance. When my ego is what's running the show, and I'm saying yes because of some notoriety. Yeah. Not a good thing. Number five, helping others gives me value. Now, that's true. I don't think God created us to be singular and isolated. I think this is all part of the connectedness. So it does give me some value, but I can't derive all of my value from giving. It has to come from inside, not outside. A little help from the outside, mind you, but mostly from the inside. And that's a process. It's been a long process. And number six, it pleases God to be of service. Nothing untrue about that. See, these are reasons for why it's difficult for me to say no. And they're good reasons. They're all good reasons. But I still sometimes need to say no. So last night I get a text message from the registration committee, and I want to thank everybody who donated to the newcomers in your while you were registering or online. That was really sweet. Anyway, it was like 11:30, almost midnight, and I get a text message, can you put in some more time tomorrow, meaning today? And I said, let me think. So, you know, And then I text him back and I said, I have to share at 10. I'm going to the H&I workshop at 1 something. So my time is a little broken up, but I maybe could, but I'm feeling like I shouldn't or no. So then I text him back a few minutes later. I said, you know, the answer is no. It's really not my best interest. Yes. I felt champagne bottles corking off in heaven. That's right. I said no. But I said no for the right reason, you know, because it was in my best interest, not because I'm a selfish whatever, whatever. I mean, when I served my 4 hours and something last night, I had a really good time. And for those of you in my line, I'd say, the good-looking people come over here. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. So saying no is a part of the solution, and then saying yes is also part of the solution. Saying yes when someone calls and says, hey, let's go see a band. Let's go do something. Let's go, hey, can I come over to your house and have some tea? Yes. Socializing, yes. It's good, and so I had my sponsees come over in January, and what we did, we set goals for the next, for this first 6 months of the year, well, actually, like February to July. And one of my personal goals in that was to... is he signaling time? All right, good. I'm not paying any attention. I'm, like, in the zone, so I'm not paying no attention. About goal setting. And one of my things was to cut back on my socializing so that I could focus on finishing the step that I'm working on and share it with my sponsor and do some other inventory material. But, you know, I'm a great one for saying yes to socializing. And it gets a little out of balance, again, because I'm an extrovert. Who wants to work, really? Come on now. So I shared my list with my sponsor who couldn't be there with us that day, and she rephrased it for me with an upswing, an uptick, you know. So it wasn't about saying no. It was, I'm going to schedule some time for myself. You know, along those lines. So it has to be positive or else I'm going to cringe and not want to do it. And that was really good. So all of this stuff, all of this emotional balance, physical balance, even spiritual balance, comes under the heading for me of getting to know myself and seeking improvement. I need to know myself. And that's where the inventory comes in. So it's indispensable. And it's constant. If I'm not doing a 10-step, I'm doing something, you know, I need to be doing something else. And I'm not saying it in a rigid way. I just need to be inventorying myself. So for a lot of reasons, but one specifically is that I get empowered by knowing who I am. And that way, when something comes along and triggers me, I'm less likely to go flying off in one direction or another. Or on some whim, or chasing a feel-good, you know, I can pause. Oh, all right. So you know that you like to socialize more than do the work. And you've socialized enough this week or this month or whatever. You know, go ahead and settle into the work. Do that. Say no this time, say yes the next time. Or say no, and can we schedule something for 3 weeks out? Whatever it means, you know, it can be done. It's all about step work. And this inventory that I shared with you is not, like, in our text. It's a piece that I got off the internet. And you know, webinars are really awesome. I have to watch how much I'm spending time listening to all this, you know, all these webinars when I need to be doing other things. But they're awesome. And meditation. So I'm going to go to the basic text. Is it time? Okay. I have a PDF basic text, and I looked up balance. And you know, it only appears one time outside of the stories. One time, page 74, 73. Emotional balance is one of the first results of meditation, and our experience bears this out. Some of us came into the program broken and hung around for a while, only to find God or salvation in one kind of religious cult or another. It's easy to float back out the door on a cloud of religious zeal and forget that we are addicts with an incurable disease. And that, that's just talking about the third step, I'm pretty sure. But that's the only place emotional balance appears in our text. And yet it's something that we, you know, a lot of us struggle with. So I was like, oh my God, there's so many places to go with this topic, and I have so much experience with imbalance, but I also have a lot of experience with balance. So if I'm just hoping that my experience, and even though I, you know, read a lot of it off the list, that it was helpful to you. And the last thing I want to share is when the cabin pressure drops and the mask falls out of the ceiling, put yours on first. Thank you.